Arizona has had a wetter than normal winter so far. In January alone, the National Weather Service says the valley was 3 degrees below normal on average, with more than an inch of rain recorded. But all of that water doesn't do much to help the dire situation on the Colorado River, which is drying up so fast the federal government is stepping in to demand massive cuts from all six states that use its water. But it's not all bad news. I recently sat down with Cynthia Campbell, the Water Resources Management Advisor for the City of Phoenix, who told me rain in the valley and snow up north certainly helps boost at least one big part of our local water supply. We get our water in Phoenix from two main sources. About 60% of it comes from the Salt and Verde Rivers, which are fed by snowpack in the mountains and on the Mogollon Rim. The other 40% or so comes from the Colorado River, and that's where we are likely facing big cuts. I spoke with Campbell more about what all of this means for Phoenix and how a wet winter like this only helps so much.
That's been a great thing. I think the reason it's a mixed bag is because on the local level, that's actually going to do a great job for our reservoirs that are run by the Salt River Project and the water supplies that come from that, which for Phoenix, that's about 60% of our water supply. Where it is not maybe as good news is in the Colorado River, not because it hasn't had a very positive impact on the Colorado River, but frankly, on the river, we are in such a hole in terms of a deficit situation of water that it would take, well, experts have told us it would take at least 3 years of these above normal precipitation levels throughout the year, combined with a complete lack of diversion. So nobody uses the Colorado River at all for three consecutive years, and then we could increase or actually fill the reservoirs. And so that, you know, I lay that out there not as a possibility, but to demonstrate the very unlikely event that any 1 year of precipitation has more than a marginal impact on the current situation in the Colorado River.
So we're talking about sort of a pie when it comes to Phoenix's water, and 60% of it is in a pretty good position, it sounds like, with the rain that we've seen so far and just the system that we have in Arizona for local water. The other 40%, though, is in a really tough spot. And we've heard a lot about Colorado River negotiations that are going on right now and what the federal government's going to insist we do to cut back on use. Where does Phoenix stand in that conversation?
So Phoenix is actively involved in the conversation to the extent that that's possible, because the negotiations that you referenced really take place at a higher level on the state level. You know, 40% is not a small amount, obviously. And so what we're having to do is we're looking for ways to reduce our reliance on that Colorado River water. And it actually comes in the form of multiple strategies. So, you know, just to kind of lay those out, one strategy is that you augment your supplies. You talk about getting new supplies from either a new source or a higher priority source in the case of the Colorado River. Mm-hmm. Two is that you work on demand management, which a lot of people will refer to as water conservation, but it's really a concerted effort to identify places where water's being used maybe less importantly or less efficiently, and start to try to tighten up how efficiently we can use water. Third is that, you know, we've had to mobilize supplies that we've had in our portfolio that happened to be in the Salt and Verde Rivers that we really were not using as much year over year, and we will be. We're going to have to move those to areas of the city that were primarily relying on Colorado River water. So that's why the city invested $300 million in a drought pipeline that runs up the 51. Many people have seen it on the side there in the Dreamy Draw. Huh. That was what that's been for. And now we're ready to move those supplies. And I think the last thing is we just need to look ahead to the future as to how do we continue to grow and develop as a city, keeping in mind that the resources that we may have had in the past in terms of Colorado River supplies won't be available to us in the future.
In terms of the Colorado River negotiations that go on, there's, you know, a divide between Arizona and California. Obviously, California has senior water rights. And then there's an urban-rural divide where most of the water traditionally is used by agriculture, but cities still need it, and they still need it too because they provide us with the food that we eat, and there's that whole debate. Where does Phoenix stand on sort of the ladder here? Do we have rights? Do we have any kind of rights?
Well, we certainly have rights in the Colorado River, but you do make the point that the central Arizona portion of Arizona's Colorado River rights are junior priority. The CAP is the junior priority on the river, and that puts us at a somewhat more vulnerable position. But what we've been trying to say is that when those priorities were established over 100 years ago, what that always contemplated was cyclical drought. That is, you know, times when the river might be a little lower, and then you would have times when the river would be a little higher. What we're seeing today is not a cyclical drought, but this is climate change. And this is, you know, I would say we're in the bullseye of climate change in Arizona. And what we're seeing in terms of our Colorado River supplies have been directly impacted by climate change, among other things. And so because of that, we're kind of asking the question of, well, those shortage, you know, the priority was never intended to completely eliminate users. But so we like to think about it a little more equitably in terms of, well, what are we bringing to the table? What does the Phoenix region bring to the table from an economic basis? What do we contribute to the federal GDP? Those kinds of things become important.
So that's your role. You're sitting at the table in these negotiations sort of saying, no, Phoenix is worth something here. You can't cut us out entirely, essentially.
Well, those are certainly the messages I try to convey to the folks from the state who actually do sit at the table. But yes, that's kind of where we're coming from.
So lots of negotiations happening there. I want to ask a little bit more about what this looks like in the future. You started to talk about options, essentially, that Phoenix has. But it sounds like if, you know, we're kind of at the low end of priorities in the Colorado River negotiations, the river is in a dire strait, and we know that everyone's going to take massive cutbacks. It sounds like Phoenix will take a lot of those. We have to think about things differently. What are the options on the table?
Well, in some ways, you know, having that kind of situation happen makes you think about things you might not have thought about before. So in Phoenix, you know, we really have focused in on becoming the most sustainable desert city on the planet. And so that requires us to think about water differently. We have to be more efficient in how we use it. We need to think about what other sources we might be able to acquire to make sure that our portfolio is again, as robust as it was just 3 or 4 years ago. These are all things that we have to do. What's important about doing those things, though, is that we don't have the luxury of time to be able to say, we're going to try this thing now, and then that thing, and then that thing. Really, all of these strategies really have to be looked at together simultaneously. We still think, though, that with all of those things in concert, if we're making a concerted effort, we actually come out the other end a much more sustainable city and an example to others, because the problem of water resource scarcity is not going to be limited to the desert Southwest eventually.
So a hopeful future, as you tend to be hopeful, I know. But I mean, we have to kind of hit the pain point first, and it sounds like it will be painful. What does this look like in everyday people's lives?
Well, the thing that we're trying to stress to people is that a lot of this is within their own control. And so the primary thing that's within people's control here in the Phoenix area is how they use water outside, how you landscape your property, whether you choose to use grass or you choose to use desertscape. But what we are also seeing is that people don't recognize the fact that a desert landscape really doesn't need to be watered every day.
I wonder, I mean, I'm sure you've thought about this, right? If you're trying to get people to change their lifestyle in significant ways, how much do you have to push them? I mean, do they have to be financially penalized or not be able to flush the toilet before they're going to say, oh, we're in a drought. Oh, we need to change things.
We really don't think so, because what we've seen over the past 30 years is a 30% reduction in the amount of water that our residents use in their homes. People, frequently kind of challenge me on that and say, well, that's because, you know, you've taken agricultural lands out of production. No, it's not related to that necessarily. We actually use less water in the city of Phoenix. We produce less water today than we did in the year 2000.
There are a ton more people who live here now, right?
About 450,000 more people. So people have learned to be more efficient with their water use. In the 1970s, 80% of the residential properties in Phoenix were what we would call majority turf. They had grass in the front yard and grass in the backyard and big mature trees, you know, kind of what you'd see in some of our downtown historical areas. Since that time, we've seen that number go down to 9%. So, you know, these are things that we've seen people do without incentives and without rebates, without buying grass. That's not to say that those programs are off the table. It's just simply to say that, to answer your question, people don't need to be mandated necessarily to make changes. The unfortunate problem is that when you do have to pull back quickly, which we might be in a position of having to pull back our use relatively quickly, it is harder to make the change very quickly. And that's where incentives and rebates and potentially things like curtailment come into play. But those, for us, we've always thought of those as buttons that we don't want to push until we absolutely needed to, because frankly, people were making the decisions on their own.
Cynthia Campbell, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your time, Lauren.